Welcome to the Decent Crypto Podcast. Today is Monday, February 13th, and we have our first guest ever. I'm joined by Matthew Blumberg, as always, and KB, a core contributor to Canto. KB, how you doing?
I'm good. Thanks for having me. I'm honored to be the first guest on Decent Podcast. I've spent some time getting to know Matt over the past few months back in New York, so I'm really happy to support him on this podcast because I'm a big fan. I believe his Vitalik pop-out is still in the apartment, so really happy to be here. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, for those listeners who don't know, we made a life-size cutout of Vitalik and his schlong photo that lives in New York. So, so KB, can you start this off by just giving us an intro, a little bit of background about yourself?
Yeah, so I've been in crypto for around like 10 years now. It's been a pretty long time and a journey, probably the majority of my life. It's like one of those things, as we all know, that you can, once you're in, you can't go out. But I had spent half of my life in crypto, just on the sidelines, not really builder, just speculating, as do most of us. I mined for a short period of time. I only got involved on the build side around like 2017, 2018, where I actually contributed to a few Cosmos projects. That was definitely super early of time because Cosmos was super new, and it was a period of time where you didn't know what was really like a scam and what technology was legitimate, because there are just so many different L1s that are trying to compete against Ethereum. But there's something about Cosmos that I knew at the time that just made it so different, and had this idea of like attracting Bitcoin mindshare and Ethereum mindshare. And the founder at the time was pretty, he had this idea of like working closely with Ethereum, which like the signaling kind of, it just for some reason made sense. So since 2017, 2018, you know, I contributed to a few projects, contributed to one project, which at the time was like the fourth or fifth project to build on Cosmos. And then 2019, I contributed to another one. I worked at Tendermint in 2021, like Q4 I joined. And then I also eventually started working on this company called Saga 6 months after. And then, as you guys all know, now I'm mostly, all my time is pretty much taken over with Canto. You know, it's been around, I think it's been a year now, actually. We're coming up on a year. The idea of Canto kind of was incepted around ETH Denver. ETH Denver's next month. There will be a Canto event happening there. So if you guys are there, holler at me. There will be some events happening around Canto, hopefully. It's pretty decentralized, but I think it will happen. But yeah, I think that's like a general intro at the moment. A lot of my work now that we're post-launch, past Genesis, a lot of what I do right now, and just to be clear, this is, Canto is fully decentralized. People just do contribute in their own way. There is no like mandate or anything of that sort. We're all just pretty enthusiastic about this project, and we all contribute in our own way, whether it's development, whether it's designing, you know, mechanism design, because there's a lot of different things being built within our ecosystem. But even, at least for me, I do a lot of like integrations. I have a good idea of like who's building what, and I help kind of onboard people into the space. I've been pretty involved with the hackathon as well. So yeah, I'm pretty much a guy that if you want, need some help with how to integrate, how to explore, if you want to speak to other contributors, I'm pretty much your guy for that. And I think the space will, it'll always evolve. I think Canto 6 months ago, the needs for that were different. The needs for Canto, what it needs to grow today are different. And again, these are all opinions. This is what I feel. But I think, like any living organism, it will always change because it is rapidly growing at the moment.
Yeah. No, that's great. That's a great background. I mean, we can get straight into it. Like normally, how we start our shows, our deep dives especially, is by asking the question, why does this thing exist? Why does Canto exist in this case? So why don't we just start there, KB? Can you help us answer that? Why does Canto exist? I think you said in your intro too, you were like, you saw in 2017, 18, there's so many, or even in the last couple of years, so many L1s coming up against Ethereum. He saw something in Cosmos, like, why does there need to be another L1? Why do we need Kanto? Why does this exist?
Yeah, I mean, this is a great question. I think people don't ask that question enough in crypto, quite honestly. But I think for when it comes to Kanto, and when you see the website as well, you'll quickly realize that it says it's a financial, like it's an experiment, right? Kanto is quite literally an experiment. We're trying, like the community is trying a completely different approach to blockchains. What does that mean? Is that like today when we see these different layer ones, right, or the app chains, we're always kind of driven, at least historically, you see all these cool blockchains pop up, and what is the first thing that people kind of talk about, right? They always talk about, we have this TPS, we have this parallelization, we have all these different cool technology stacks, and this is why we're different, and this is why you should build on us, right? This is like, at least from what I'm seeing, the standard kind of pitch to like build on this L1 versus that L1, or like our operating language, like our smart contract language is much better UX, right? Like these are the things that we kind of see. But when you look at Kanto, actually, right, we are a layer one, and you're absolutely correct. But what makes us different is actually not technology. What makes us different is actually the way that we kind of think about blockchains. We're not thinking about it about from a technology perspective. We're thinking about more from like a socioeconomic perspective. And what that means is that we kind of think about, and again, this is my opinion, everyone has their own interpretation. The way I kind of see Kanto is like this city, essentially blockchain as a city. And if you are a city, if you want people to construct or build or run organizations or companies within your city, you have to have infrastructure, right? And our interpretation of the right infrastructure comes from like, we're looking at it from a socioeconomic perspective, not technology. So that could be like, we basically think that critical infrastructure for blockchains would be like DeFi primitives, right? Because even if you see the history of DeFi, right, like even to this day, the most important primitives that we've seen are the DEX, the lending protocol, and the stablecoin, right? Like MakerDAO is arguably the first one, right? In 2016, that came out, 2017. And since then, we got Uniswap, we got Aave, we got Compound, different forms of these primitives, but they're still like the main primitives, essentially, right? Within Ethereum land, for example. So our idea was like, or like the general premise was like, what if we looked at these as, because they're so important, because everyone uses it, they're so like composable and they always exist within all these different protocols since the beginning of their inception. The idea was like, these things should be probably public primitives. They should be free to use. And their roadmap, because they're so important, should basically be governed by the protocol itself. So a version of the way to think about that would be like, if we see Compound or Aave, for example, or like a DEX, like if we see the DEX lending protocol or stablecoin in Ethereum, they were all governed by Ethereum holders, not their respective governance coins. So in Kanto, for example, we created, there's a module that was created called the Uni, sorry, the governance shuttle, that's what we called it. And basically, when you stake your Kanto, right, at the proof of stake level, right, which is on the Cosmos side, there's a module that was created that allows when you stake your Kanto, you can govern in some governance proposals to our lending protocol. And at the moment, the DEX is non-governable and the stablecoin doesn't have governance, mostly just the lending protocol. But I would imagine, right, as other primitives are launched by whoever, they can all be governed by Kanto holders. So it's very clear value accrual. It's not like all these random esoteric coins that we don't know how value accrues to them. And this is a debate that's happening today, right? Like people are like, what do we think about governance coins? Is there value accrual? And people are trying to figure out how to change what has happened previously to figure out how governance coins today, because they don't really have any option, can accrue more value. But for us, it's like we think of it kind of vertically integrating all of the critical primitives, right? Like what we believe will be free public infrastructure to all be governed by the Kanto coin, or the Kanto token. So that's kind of the high level in terms of our approach to how people should look at Kanto is not for a technology stack. And this is why as well, right? This is the simple trap is why people are so quick to call it a fork. But it's not, and I think that's the point of like the moment you do that, you're actually looking at Kanto as like a technology innovation. But again, it's not really that. It's just how we vertically integrate it and enshrine all these different primitives at the protocol level. But I'm going to take a break here because I could go on. I just want to make
Yeah.
sure I'm answering your question.
No, that's, I mean, that's quite helpful. Yeah, go ahead, Matt.
Yeah, that it's interesting to think about it as like a as a socioeconomic like experiment, right? So just like to recap for like our listeners, what exactly is like like nothing stopping Aave or Uniswap or whoever from launching on Kanto, right? It's EVM compatible. What's special about these like core pieces of infrastructure at the Kanto level that like differentiates them from any other like Borrowland like market, for example?
So the question is they're actually not different at the moment. If you separate them, if you separate these three primitives and just put them in their own like vacuum, they're actually not different at all. In fact, they're probably inferior because they're like a V2 fork, or it's a primitive fork. Like we don't even have V3 Uniswap. We have a compound
Hey man,
V2,
I like
right?
V2.
So V2, everyone loves it, right? That's like our safe spot, and like it basically we all have had good times in V2 Texas for sure, and I think we're still having it. But no, I think if you isolate them 1-to-1, right, and you remove everything else, they're actually primitive, right, as of what it is. But the point is they all kind of work together synergistically, right? So like when you interact with Kanto, you are providing LP to the DEX, which is zero, free to use. And then our liquidity mining program at the moment, basically you supply your LP to the lending protocol, and then you earn rewards. And then you can also choose to like lend out USDC or USDT to you can borrow against it to create note, which is over collateralized. But the idea is that the answer to your point, Matt, is if you separate them and you just think of them in a vacuum as our DEX versus whatever exists somewhere else, it probably will be more primitive. But the whole point is like our thing, when you look at Kanto, they're all coming together, right? It's this whole synergistic infrastructure that they're all interconnected. And the idea is like eventually this will keep scaling out, right? Like as other primitives will keep getting deployed, it'll be like 8, 9, who knows, maybe 10 primitives that are all working synergistically. And I guess, and this is my opinion, is that it's really hard to do that in Ethereum because these different primitives have their own roadmaps, they have their own VCs, they have their own selfish reasons, which is not anyone's fault. They make sense, right? Like they have their own roadmaps. For them to work synergistically, at any point, I don't. There's a probability of that happening is a lot harder than you would think, right? Because they have their own roadmaps and their own selfish reasons to do so, right? For profit or whatever, right?
So what does that mean exactly, that when they're all these primitives are working together synergistically at the protocol level? Like, what does that mean actually, like either for a developer, like as a non-developer myself, like how is that helpful for the community, for the people trying to build on top of it, like or even users, right? Like, is this does this make things cheaper? Does it make things more scalable? Like, where is the like increased utility, I guess?
Yeah, great question. I think like the idea is that at the moment, if you see other places that you can utilize these lending pools or these liquidity pool, like these DEX liquidity pools, but they're not like they're owned by separate entities in a way, right? So for us with Kanto, I think there could be some form of predictability, I guess, right? In a way that we know that these primitives have existed since the genesis of this protocol. These liquidity pools are essentially free to use. There's no rent seeking, right? Like I can integrate my protocol into the DEX and there's no bips taken in the middle, like, or if I'm interacting with any of like these lending pools, there's no like, again, bips taken, right? There's other lending protocols that exist and there is like a take on top of like whatever the interest rate is, right? If you look at other protocols that exist in Ethereum or even Solana, for example. So the idea is that throughout the existence of this protocol, we want to create this kind of rich environment. But instead of looking at it from a technology UX, it's kind of like you have this financial UX, right? Like DeFi UX, like it's all free to use. It's like you have a lending protocol, like you have a liquidity pool in the DEX that you could use, you can integrate. You don't, it's free to use. It has some form of credible neutrality, right? Because it's existed, it's governed by like the Kanto holders. It's not like one roadmap, one roadmap, one roadmap, right? Per primitive. It's like all these three primitives that you have some predictability. There's, as I said, form credible neutrality and they're free to use. And I guess the point is as you build potentially your own protocol, that is, you might have, it might, it doesn't have to be a public good, right? Like maybe you build like an options protocol, I don't know, some perpetuals, who knows, right? Or even just, you know, an NFT, right? Like as a, our, we have our NFT platform at the moment, right? Called Alto. It's free to use, right? So like, it, it's a lot kind of, like, and we're kind of seeing our NFT ecosystem blow up quite, I was surprised, honestly, but like, it's been kind of the most interesting thing that has happened so far for Canto at the moment, besides obviously the activity in the lending pools or DeFi side. And they're all free to use. So the whole point, at least my interpretation, is to give as much value back to the people that are building on it and to the end user as well, right? And remove, to just make interacting with these things a lot easier. And from building perspective as well, right? Like you don't have to interact with like some random for-profit, like I'm speaking esoterically in a way, but like what I'm trying to say is that these things will always be available to you no matter what, as long as Canto exists and you can integrate with them quite freely. There is no, it's predictable what they're going to do, right? Because even today, right, there's only four assets on Canto Dex. There, it's pretty, I think you could come to some point and say that at least for the duration of time that we can expect these four assets to come and exist there. And if people want to integrate into them, if you focus on those four assets, you will probably get an integration that will get users, right? Because you're focused on these four assets. That seems to be the most important thing, or the asset pools that have the most liquidity on Canto at the moment.
Mm. So are these like these primitives that are here, are these set in stone? Are there more primitives that might be added in the future? Or is that just all governance based? Like if the holders decide, you know, they need to add more functionality, that's something that could come down the line.
Yeah. Okay. So are you saying, does governance choose what new primitives are getting deployed?
Or yeah.
Wait, just elaborate a little bit on that.
Yeah. That's the question essentially. Okay. Is like, are these primitives set in stone or is it like a governance? Is governance going to decide if there are more added in the future?
Yeah. So, I would say that nothing is set in stone at the moment. At like 100%, there will be different implementations that will come out. And the idea is that the best thought, like the thought process or some form of meritocracy, and again, this is my interpretation or opinion on it, will take over. Like there's forums that exist right now, like even today, for example, right? Like our lending protocol is not switching. Like you cannot actually borrow yet. You can only print note, but you can borrow against and create note. But our lending
can is you not explain that? Yet. Can you explain note a little bit and this whole process for the people that don't know?
Yeah. So note is Canto's native stablecoin. The design is similar, and it's a similar to DAI, where in a sense where it's over collateralized. And note is created when you supply a dollar of USDC or USDT, you can create 80 cents of note, right? So it's over collateralized at the moment. And with that, you can partake in liquidity pool like Canto Node or whatever respective liquidity pools exist. You can yield farm. But the idea is that note is kind of the stable coin for the Canto ecosystem. If we have this one stable coin that everyone can use, the idea is that the UX can become a lot easier for both counterparties, the user and builders. There have been discussions in our Discord around like maybe using Note as gas, but those are like super early. I don't know. I personally don't know. That's like spicy topic, but I don't really know too much on that side. But you can kind of see when that since there are discussions like that happening, Note is going to be a very important part of this ecosystem, essentially. At the moment, it's quite, I'm pretty astonished at the moment. Like if you see in the Cosmos world, in the IBC world, there aren't, after unfortunately UST blew up, there hasn't really been any big stable coins that have existed within Cosmos. I know USDC is coming. There is this thing called IST. I don't know if you've heard of it, from the Agoric team, which is like a MakerDAO for the Interchain or the IBC world. So for your reader or your listeners, that means the Cosmos world. But I don't know the T-bill on that, but like at the moment, for us, I believe we will actually be, if people were to compare Note to the other ecosystems at the moment, I do think that we have a pretty sizable amount of the market share. I think it's like 35 to 40 million of Note in circulation at the moment. But yeah, to your point, Karan, right, it's just very similar to MakerDAO in that sense where it's over-collateralized. It's not a stable coin. We don't call it a stable coin. It's a unit of account. I have to correct that. It can trade under a dollar and it can trade over a dollar. It is definitely not a stable coin. So I take that back. Yeah. But
it's minted only with stable coins, right? You can't mint it with Kanto.
That's Kanto
token. I mean, okay, cool.
You cannot, but the idea, and there's design, there's discussions around this happening on mechdesign.build for those who want to follow the mech design discussions. It's called mechdesign.build. Basically the idea is like we're exploring what collateral factors are going to be looked at when enabling the lending protocol. And at the moment for the lending the idea is like eventually you can borrow against your LP shares. Because remember I mentioned earlier, you can supply to the LP, you supply your LP, and then you can supply, like you provide your liquidity, you get your LP shares on the DEX, and you supply your LP shares to the lending protocol. The idea is that eventually you can borrow against that and create Note. So you can borrow against, and at that point, it won't just be USDC or USDT. So there's discussions around allowing which LP shares will be allowed to borrow against it. And at that point, I believe capital efficiency should increase, but I'm definitely not the expert on that. So be transparent about that.
It's interesting, right? Because, you know, at the core, right, you have these like DeFi primitives that are not collecting any fees. And so as a result, you sort of have to incentivize somehow the creation of liquidity, right? And so LP shares wind up becoming like a first class citizen, right? Where you can use them to, you know, to mint. I think it's not even mint because technically I think all of the Note in existence has already been minted at like Genesis time. And so it's like it exists, but you borrow it from like an accountant smart contract when I look into it.
Yes, you're right. It looks pretty funky when you look at it because it's like trillion in supply.
I see.
It's like you're holding it, but you're absolutely correct, Matt. Yes.
Why so bearish? Just 1 trillion?
Yeah.
I don't know the number. I think they just type a significant number. I don't know if it's 1 trillion. I have no idea, but I know it's. You might see that you're like, what the fuck am I looking at? But I'm sorry,
dude. Jerome Powell is not going to be happy about this one. Just one.
Just yeah. One. No, right.
Those are rookie numbers.
But like you know, it's interesting, right? Because you wind up with LP shares playing like a larger role, I think, than they generally tend to within a lot of ecosystems, just because like liquidity is really incentivized, right? You know, that's the experiment here, is like, can you incentivize enough liquidity that enough people get interested in the ecosystem and build enough interesting things based on that like free liquidity that the that you can turn down the absolute volume of like Kanto like printing, so that and still like have people like leave their liquidity there, that it's still like the highest yielding usage, for, like USDC, for example.
Yeah. So like I think Scott, this is a really good point, Matt. So like, and this is where people kind of think of like, how is this sustainable, right? You can't just keep printing, right? At the end of the day, and this is the same problem with all these different DeFi primitives. Like, if you keep printing, there's this idea of like, you've seen historically, and not making names, is that these, when you're printing, you're creating a subsidy, right? Essentially, it is a form of subsidy. It is a cost to the protocol. It's an expense. And the idea is like, when you look at these and you say, was this program successful? It's like, this was our goal. This was the expense. We, you know, we printed X amount of coins value over the next year. Do we achieve our goal, right? And at least the way I think about it, and this is where Ethereum has succeeded, is that it's creating protocol revenue, right? What is that, like fees generating, right? And they created a very quantifiable way to see how much revenue is being generated in the form of fees for this network. And I at least in my opinion, that's how you can quantify success, right? If the fees are greater than the subsidy, that means that you're in a net positive, and that means that you're getting the intended effect and you're succeeding. How many protocols are doing that today? not that many. I think there will be an added kind of, I think people are quickly realizing that there's now more focus on protocol generated revenue, right? And the way, as I said, as fees is one metric. I'm sure there's other metrics that will come. And the reason why I'm saying that, and this is like, I think there was a tweet, I think like 2 days ago or yesterday that Scott said, and I'll just put up another point. I'm sure you guys have noticed that our gas fees are actually not cheap. Our gas fees are around like 80 cents a transaction, which is quite expensive relative to everyone else that are not FEMAC. Like they think low fees are a thing, and they think that if you're going to compete against Ethereum or you want to be a side, like an alternative to Ethereum, you need low fees. But for us, we actually believe gas fees are quite good. And we can get into that later because of stuff around gas rebates and stuff. But I think like there's a tweet that Scott talks about as well, right? Which is like the long-term sustainability of Canto requires, right, is like MEV plus base fee burn, right? We have EAP 1559 to be greater than the liquidity mining plus security emissions and other public goods funding. And at the moment, like we've had gas usage go way up. Our gas fees are 10x'd. So like it was 8 cents when we started or around like 5 cents. Now we're like at 80 cents because the blockchain is being utilized significantly more. And our liquidity emissions are way less. Like there's a proposal going out, I think in a few hours, to reduce security emissions even more and to reduce our LM emissions by 30% as well next week. So like the approach to Canto is very kind of dynamic. This is something we haven't really seen in other ecosystems. It's like they just launched this schedule, but they don't understand. Well, at least my opinion is that in these type of environments, we should always figure out how to optimize the right economics or the monetary policy to optimize for the best result. You know, even in the last 6 months, the space has changed significantly. We've gone through so many different long tail of risks and effects. Canto, for example, has become the value of Canto, and I hate talking about price, but in this position, it's significantly bigger. We have a much bigger user base. So it kind of justifies, my understanding is that it justifies the ability to like decrease emissions, right, and create long-term sustainability. But yeah, okay. So my point is, to not ramble, is that the idea is that eventually we don't have to emit. Like if Canto is Canto will be a success, I guess, this is the way to think about it. If the MEV, right, the MEV and the base fee burn is greater than the incentive. So eventually these things can essentially recirculate and they can be recircled into incentives for like the DEX lending or whatever other primitives in the long scale. That's, I guess, my approach to what could be perceived as success for Canto.
That's super interesting, right? Because a lot of blockchains today, like layer ones, you think about emissions, but they're primarily just like block rewards, right? They're going to the validators to like support like staking yields. They don't That's go correct. To anything close to like an application level, like a, you know, a liquidity provider, right? So that's a really creative take on it.
Yeah, and to your point, Matt, as well, it's like there will only exist MEV if there is useful economic activity. Like, why would you want to pay that tip if there wasn't enough economic activity, right? So the idea is like they kind of work synergistically. If there is enough economic activity happening or people perceive that it is worth their time to tip or to prioritize themselves in the mempool, that means that it also kind of means that there's some form of success happening in Canto, right? Obviously, it's like this feedback loop in a way that people believe or perceive that we will prioritize transactions, we'll pay more tips or whatever, because we perceive that the economic activity justifies whatever the net profit is after you pay that fee, right?
Yeah. Okay, quick question, just because you touched on it and I can't resist a term like this. What's a gas rebate?
Yeah. So this has been a very spicy topic. I don't know why it was spicy, but I think very simple, right? So I don't know the specific technicals, but I'll just say from the high, my low IQ perspective. So like gas rebates are essentially like, let's say you deployed, let's say you deployed like an NFT marketplace on Canto. And every month, for example, in this scenario, right, I don't know the intervals that are there on the contract, but let's say every month, you know, the three of us spend $1 million of gas on this contract, right? Like, and the gas rebates are essentially 20% of those, of the gas spent. So the million, so 200K will come back to the deployer. So like you have some form of like you're basically earning off the deployment of a successful contract, essentially, right? And that's gas rebates at a very primitive level. The implement gas rebates is not novel to Canto. Gas rebates have existed for a while. People have mentioned NEAR's implementation. People have mentioned, I think there's other protocols that exist that have done gas rebates. I think Phantom said they're going to do it. I'm not too sure of the specifics. But our implementation is actually a little different. The idea is gas rebates exist. And I think the point of why we are looking at gas rebates as well is that like we're trying to optimize for the best UX for users, right? Like today, when you look at a lot of these projects, and again, this is my opinion, is that people's way for cashing out, right? Protocols cashing out. What I see is that they create this governance coin that the value accrual is kind of not clear, right? And you print this money or whatever, and there's no value accrual to the users. And that's kind of the way that protocol founders are cashing out, essentially. But then you also see like protocols like OpenSea, for example, where they take BIPs or something and they make money, right? Where there's different forms of business, or different ways to like, I guess, make profit or to make it worth your time. But the idea is that from gas rebates, if used effectively, especially in a network with Canto, where a lot of these primitives are kind of enshrined, like the most important primitives will be enshrined in public to and easy to use or free to use. The idea is that you optimize as a developer to build the best product that gets the best usage, right? And what that means is that if you build something that people want to use, then naturally you're going to have a lot of gas, like usage is correlated to your gas rebate at the end of the day, right? And there has been some kind of, I'd say, discussion around, oh, doesn't that mean that as a developer, will I make it a more complicated smart contract to charge more gas, right? That's what they would say. But think about my approach is that doesn't make sense because this is a free market. At the end of the day, if I make something that doesn't make sense for the user, why would they use it, right? Like if I charge like amounts that make literally no sense, at the end of the day, me as a user, I still have to click, like I still have to accept that transaction, right? And if it's so mispriced or it doesn't make any sense to the point where it's very obvious that the developer was not optimizing for UX, which is the point of this. And we're just optimizing for the most greedy fees, right? By making this overly complicated contract that could quite clearly be optimized, no one's going to click it, so or use it. So, like, I'm just kind of putting that out there as well because that's been a discussion. I'm sure that's something that would have came up. Is like, aren't our devs incentivized to create optimized contracts when they know they can make more money off expensive contracts? But the idea is that the way that I would look at it is, as a developer, I'd want the net usage of these contracts to be more, right? So that means the best UX and the more people hitting it, the more gas I'd make net instead of like 10 scam transactions with high gas fees. Let me take a break because I'm kind of going off right now, but I can add more about some specifics around our implementation as well. It's a little different, but I guess I'm going to take a stop here real quick.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty interesting. So this is effectively what people are calling like contract secured revenue, right? And one interesting use case for this that I've heard is that like you could slightly more optimize the wrapped ETH contract, right? And all of a sudden you have an incentive to do that. Whereas like if you in its current iteration, there's no incentive to put any work in on wrapped ETH, right? It just is what it is.
That's correct.
You know, the, but here you could actually stand to like get some kind of like economic value from doing a better job. And better job, I think, is key here because there is that like market driven incentive. I agree. Like I've heard a lot of like sort of mid-curve takes on, oh, as a developer, won't I just like make this use more gas? Aren't I just like taxing the system? But yeah, and the answer is sometimes yes, right? So you look at like the Yuga Labs, like other deeds, like land sale. It was clearly like a messed up like contract, very poorly written, super wasteful, and everyone had to use it anyway. But those occasions are pretty rare, right? And all of us, I think, like in this space, care about the quality of the on-chain experience to the point where we do like more gas optimized things, right? Even for like OpenSea, right? Like they went hard on their Seaport contract, which like winds up like not actually really accruing them any more value, right? But it does like make the network more usable. which helps their business model in the long run.
Exactly.
So yeah,
long run. Keyword long run. I think like it's very quickly easy to say in the short run I can just get this quick profit, but the idea is like at scale, if this contract does really well for the genesis, like since the creation of Canto, right, we're thinking in long term, you will win and you'll make more money while also optimizing the UX of your user. I think that's the key thing here. And I think another way that our thing is a little different as well, that's kind of different than other implementation that isn't, I think this is more novel to Canto. No one has really talked about it because it just stopped at gas rebates. But the basically when the way that our gas rebate is given, so when you deploy the contract, it's actually provided in the form of an NFT. So like you're given an NFT, which is DeFi composable. Yeah. So like you can actually fractionalize it, or you can, it's an NFT. So the moment it becomes NFT, you have like this kind of representation of your gas rebate, which is DeFi composable. So like you can fractionalize it, you can give it back to your user base. It's pretty open what you can do. And I think I don't really have an idea. Like there's a blog post that Plex provided. I think you can maybe add it later to the chat or whatever. That talks about all the different, the design space is quite open because we have this NFT representation. And that's actually novel, is the representation of this in kind of DeFi composable way. Like for example, there is a protocol called, like I'm sure you guys have heard of OX splits, right? It's like a hyperstructure just in Ethereum. Like you can put your CSR probably in OX splits and then split it, and then people can like maybe buy forms of it, right? Like that could be an early way to bootstrap your protocol in a way, right?
Whoa. So it's like a direct revenue like share.
Yeah.
That's
I don't
wild.
Know how to use those words. But,
well, yeah, exactly right. Yeah, we're getting into security too. Right?
Yeah.
But
the
idea is like to open the design space, right? And I think this is what's super cool to me, is that like it's out there and I think people will start exploring with it. And it basically, as I said, the whole point of the space, and I think this is really the point, and this goes back to your broader question that you asked originally, Karin, is like, why do we choose this tech stack? And this is what I actually truly enjoy about Cosmos, really, and why this really makes sense, is that EVM undoubtedly is like the best application layer. It's the most rich. It has the best developer set. But Cosmos is definitely one of the best in production technology, like SDKs that exists, that has wide adoption, and it allows optionality at even the client. We call it an Ethereum world client level, but in Cosmos, then we call it like the SDK level, right? Where we have IBC optionality, which is growing significantly, right? Like people are using IBC a lot. You're actually seeing forms of IBC being implemented, derivatives of it. Like Layer Zero has some implementation, a different derivative of IBC. We have a Hyperlane. People are looking, using this type of TCIP or form messaging protocol. And the whole point, and I know I'm on a tangent, I know we're talking about gas rebates, but I just wanted to answer that question. Really, it was just that the whole point of Canto is to create optionality and to remove like this debt, right? Because we don't know where we're heading into, but we wanted to choose an approach that was quite flexible, and it allows to reduce our technology debt, which is always a big consideration, and it allows for flexibility when choosing other integrations as the time goes by. And I think the EVM allows for that in terms of like just the developer space and the things built around it, and also the Cosmos, arguably after Ethereum, is quite established in terms of the tooling, infrastructure, and people building on it. So I know we're on a tangent, but just wanted to kind of add that to that point.
Yeah.
No such thing as a tangent a half hour into the episode.
Yeah, exactly. So there is one thing that you mentioned that I wanted to touch on, which is you said that the NFT community, the NFT ecosystem is really blowing up on Canto. Can you get more into that? I've been following a couple of collections there. I know Scott has been tweeting about a new collection, like just dropped yesterday or something. But can you explain a little bit about why that's happening? Like what exactly you're seeing there?
Yeah. When I think about this, it actually kind of makes me laugh. But I think it comes down to I'm sure you've interacted. I think Matt has interacted with Kent. I'm not sure if you have, Karin, but I think you'll quickly realize our community is actually super fun.
Yeah.
Take things lightly. You know, we did launch in a bear market. But you'll quickly realize that like what we like to focus on is fun. And what that means is like culture. Because, and I think there's been discussions around this as well recently, is like the things that make protocols and things unique is that blockchains are not just like these Web2 apps that exist in their silos. You're not just clicking search on something. They're actually communities, right? Like every single people, when we buy into a protocol or we like engage in these communities, we're interacting with other people that basically create the value or the identity of this protocol. And I think a lot of people have forgotten. That's what makes Ethereum Ethereum. And that's what also what Cosmos was super big. It's like there's a culture there. Like it's like Solana has also established some form of culture to some extent with their NFT space. And to your point, I think the one of the most successful ways to kind of showcase culture and at least what I've seen is the NFT world, because it's lighthearted. It's more about fun. It's about creativity. And what I think that's the way that it translates. That's the closest translation to culture and fun around an ecosystem. And what I'm trying to, I guess my point is that we seem to, because our culture is more lighthearted, like just like random shit posting, we have so many memes, which I love. It has translated to people creating this kind of rich NFT ecosystem. There's a lot of grifting happening, unfortunately. This is what happens when chains grow, but there are a lot of interesting ones as well. I mean, like the first NFT that like the first original NFT that launched today, like on the Genesis was like Canto Longnecks. You know, their floor right now is around like, again, not trying to talk about price, but just mentioning it in a way, it's like 3,500, you know, they minted at 150, back in like August, September. So like, there is like a pretty rich user base of people within the Canto community that they like taking part in it. And they also use, I don't know, I guess their profits or whatever their pool liquidity to like also circulate into NFTs, which creates this really kind of like a feedback loop essentially, which we kind of want to see, right? That's important for any place, right? Like even in Ethereum, when Ethereum kind of went out, like they all made like a bunch of money, and then they kind of circulate like trickle down economics to some extent to like NFTs and protocols, right? And we are starting to build that out. There's a lot of original collections that are starting to come out. There was a guy recently that I personally like called Arno Kiss, came out recently, and he was like some designer for Artifact and a few others, and he launched a collection and minted out in 3 minutes, which is kind of crazy. So like people are minting out, the original collections are minting out, which to me, I'm kind of astonished because we're pretty early in the life cycle of the space. There's actually, you know, I have an actually interesting story to this point, and this is the whole point of like onboarding users, right? Like we're kind of pretty experienced in terms of what we've involved with. We're in crypto, we're out talking to podcasts. But I have a friend actually, for example, you know, he was there from, like, he's not really in crypto, but he's like some TradFi person. We hate those people, I guess, but he's a TradFi person. He works in private equity, but he's like, hey, dude, your project's super cool. How could I take part in it? And I'm like, dude, anyone can, there's no, like, you're too formal. But like the idea was just like, hey, how can I get involved? I was like, yo, here's what you do. You just, he bridged, he took, and this is what I truly, I think makes Canto so unique, is to take part in the Canto ecosystem. It's purely on chain. So like you have to bridge on, you have to figure out the headache of what bridging is, which for some users, like they just meme about it. You have to bridge, you have to go on Gravity Bridge, which the UX is, for some people, they might not like it, but it's like 20 minutes because it's optimized for safety. You bridge in, you have to wrap your ether if you do that, which is annoying for some people. You bridge it in, and then you're like, okay, I have to go to Slingshot, which is another protocol, to swap. So it's like you're taking multiple steps. But at this point, you've already bridged. You've gone to another platform. You've gone to another front end to swap. And then you have to go back to LP. And then I was telling him, he's doing that whole process. He's learning, right? Like this, we're, essentially, this whole flow, we're getting this user on chain, which has historically been an annoying thing for most people. We're getting him to do that. And then I was like, yo, mint a long neck. So he minted a long neck, right? In October, like he minted like three. Next thing I know, like 2 months ago, he's like, yo, I've just been farming this. Yo, the long neck seems to have been sold out. The floor is like 4K. And this guy is freaking hooked. Like he bridged, he's farming, he minted an NFT. And he's just like, dude, this is so cool. And this is so fun. So the whole point is what I'm just saying, it might not seem that cool for what we're saying, but you have to understand, we did this whole process where we've onboarded a TradFi person, for example, and he is now degenning and having fun on Canto. He's minted NFT and is farming. And I think this, and the whole point of why I'm mentioning this is, I think this is the broader story that's happening here. is that there's so many users that are doing, they're being forced out of their comfort zone to do what we actually want. I think this is what's needed for crypto to succeed, quite honestly, is our on-chain ecosystems across not only Canto, even Ethereum, are so rich. There's so many things we can do, but we always are kind of lazy, or you can just buy it on an exchange, right? But like, it kind of, the real ability or the richness of crypto is actually existing with the on-chain. I'm sure Matt for sure is a degen, so he definitely interacts with a lot of these things in terms of on-chain stuff. So my point is that a lot of, pretty much our whole community is doing that, right? And that's why it's like one of the richest on-chain ecosystems I've ever seen so far, because that's just how you get in. You cannot buy Canto anywhere. You can only get it on DEX, half the bridge. So yeah, through that process, by bridging in and buying NFT becomes easy suddenly. That's easier than bridging. So
yeah,
it's just, I this is like a true tangent, but this is just something that I feel is important. I think this is like the underlying story of why our community is so rich and why the NFT ecosystem is so rich. Is like, it's just like this whole kind of feedback loop happening.
Yeah. So what are the ways that people can get involved? You know, is it start hanging out in the Discord, start following the memes? Like, you know, what's the best way for people to get involved?
I think definitely follow the memes, because we all like to have fun here. But I think the best way to get involved is, as a developer, is the hackathons. We have hackathons running every single month remotely. 300k in prizes. I believe the grand prize makes 100k. I'm not sure, don't quote me. It's either 50k or 100k Canto, which is a sizable amount for 1 month. Like 2 months ago, it might have been a small amount, but it's now quite a sizable amount for someone for a 1 month hackathon. And I think this month's hackathon is going to be the biggest one ever. I think we have 20, like we have at least 20 projects presenting. And it's just starting to scale out. But yeah, I mean, to get involved, I think, you know, the Discord is quite active. You can engage with a bunch of contributors there. There are forums that are going to come out, I believe, around different verticals. So whether it's mech design, whether it's just general development, whether it's integrations, I'm not too sure, but I know that there are some forums that exist. For example, mech design is one that exists right now. But I think the best way for people to get involved is truly just the hackathons. I think if anyone wants to get involved, they can also message me, but we have this every month perpetually. So every month we have a hackathon. And I think that's the easiest way to get involved. I think the amount is quite sizable now at this point. So I expect this to keep growing, and we're pretty engaged. I mean, you can follow us on Twitter as well. Like, there's a lot of contributors. But I think going to Discord and the hackathons is the best approach. That's what I would do personally.
Cool.
Is there anywhere to see like which, like, you know, projects have launched so far, or like, you know, who has been part of the past like hackathon seasons?
Yeah. So there is a website for the ecosystem. It actually just slipped my mind, but I can just share the website for it's called the Canto. So it's called the COH. Underscore, so the Canto Online Hackathon on Twitter. I'll put in this chat. So if you follow that on Twitter, that's the online hackathon. Like, as of right now, we have like, yeah, we have more than 20, but I think maybe after the podcast I can share some of the directory that we have for like projects that exist from like a landscape view for Canto. I just don't know it off the top of my head, unfortunately.
Cool. Yeah. We can definitely link it in the show notes. And yeah, I was scrolling through some of the hackathon projects yesterday, and there's some pretty cool stuff. There's like an ASCII art NFT generator. I think it's like the coolest thing.
Yeah, that was actually kind of cool too. I thought I kind of liked it. And you know, those are things I really like, because I think our vibes are very, very like, at least my perspective, and this is subjective, but it's just like very underground, very, do your own thing, right? Be yourself. And I actually do really like, as you said, the ASCII, so that's kind of stuff I generally like. I'm trying to get some anime art onto Canto, but hopefully we can get something in the next few months. We'll see.
Oh, that'd be super cool.
Yeah.
Awesome. You got anything else, Matt?
Oh, no, thanks. This was, man, having a guest is amazing. We really have to talk.
I know, this is fantastic, KB.
Maybe
thank you for coming
on. Maybe I talk too much.
And, Absolutely not. No. We could keep this going. We'll have to have you on again in like 6 to 12 months and get an update on what's going on with Kanto and see which NFTs are popping off.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I'm happily, I think maybe next time we do a good, because maybe we can get some more contributors as well, you know?
Nice.
I think the community will grow, so.
Yeah, that'd be great. Pretty excited. Cool. Thank you again, KB, for coming on. This has been the Decent Crypto Podcast. We'll be back later this week. Have a good week, everybody. Until then, stay decent.
None of this was financial advice, legal advice, investment advice, or any other kind of advice. If you're looking for advice, you are definitely in the wrong place. Until next time, stay decent.